This is the Soapbox, and we've been speaking to David Talbot, author of The Devil's Chessboard, Alan Dulles, the CIA, and the Rise of America's Secret Government. David, this is a very well-researched book. How long did it take you to research it and write it?
Well, the actual research and writing of this book was about 3 years, and I worked with a colleague named Karen Croft, who's a wonderful associate who has worked on all of my books with me, and so, of course, that made it go quicker. She's a wonderful researcher, but it really flowed out of my earlier book on the Kennedy brothers.
Right.
And so when you put those two books together, they're kind of like Godfather 1 and 2. That whole project took about 6 or 7 years of our lives.
Mm. When you were researching the books, did anything surprise you, or were you pretty much knew everything, or just like, well, this is the Dulles brothers, this is Alan Dulles, so of course these things happened?
You know, I think what surprised me the most, Cindy, was his psychopathology. I didn't realize before I began really to get into the book how, you know, deeply twisted, you know, to put it bluntly, this man was, and how someone who was this pathological could rise to the very top of American power. And in fact, I think his pathology helped him do that. You know, we all know about the studies of men in power and how they often are on this spectrum of pathology, psychopathology, and certainly Alan Dulles was a man at one end of that extreme. He was able, as we talked about earlier, to do the most cruel things with really without blinking. You never got a sense from reading his writing or the interviews with him or talking to people who knew him that this was a man with any moral qualms whatsoever about all of the mayhem and bloodshed that he was responsible for. He had absolute certainty in what he was doing, and he thought that anything he did in the service of his own interests and those of the powerful men he served was justified. And so this kind of arrogance and cold cruelty, I think, has become now embedded, really, in the kind of the power psyche of America. And we see this through line, not just with Dulles, but all the way up to, you know, Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and John Brennan, head of the CIA today. And really, you know, despite his many attributes and his charms, you know, even the President of the United States, both Bush and Obama, were able to do really the most unspeakable things without seemingly having any kind of attacks of conscience.
Well, of course, this the United States was founded on evil genocide and slavery, but how much do you think Alan Dulles was a product of it or has influenced where we are today, that what you were just talking about, the pathology of the U.S. government?
Well, he was, I think, took it to a whole new level. America was emerging, along with his own career at the same time, as the most powerful nation by far in the world. Coming out of World War II, of course, most of the developed economies in Europe and Russia had been devastated by the war, and America stood alone as a robust country that had suffered actually relatively very little from this devastating war. And so that's really when the American empire goes into warp speed. Of course, the American empire has roots earlier in the century, and we know about the history of the Spanish-American War and how we stole the Philippines and Cuba and so on, and that's the beginning of the modern American empire. But after World War II, because of the power vacuum internationally, America was really able to do whatever it wanted. And the Dulles brothers, their rise to power is synonymous with that kind of new American hubris, that new American imperial hubris. And so the Dulles brothers, you can't separate their own careers from that of the rise of this enormously powerful new empire.
Well, and you think about it, the CIA is a relatively a young institution in the United States, and it's just become so powerful, so insidious since it began.
Yeah, again, it's this arrogance that, as Dulles said, he had, all these studies that were done during the Eisenhower era of the CIA that came out of some genuine concern about the CIA being out of control. But in the end, these studies basically reaffirmed his right to do whatever he wanted because, as one report said, in this new ruthless world that we live in, facing this ruthless rival in Moscow, the Soviet Union, anything should be permitted. Well, that's the same kind of, I think, lawlessness and immoral behavior that's been sanctioned in this country throughout the Cold War and now the War on Terror. People in power in America always find a rationale for their evil, and there's no other way of putting it. When you're talking about torture and assassinations and mind control experimentation and all the rest, all the other things that the CIA has been doing for the last 50 years or more, since 1947. What is it? I'm doing the math here. 70 years. So, in any case, but that, again, that the roots of that arrogance, and for American people to really understand how we got to this dark place that we're in today, they really should read The Devil's Chessboard. And I'm not just tooting my own horn here. It's just, I think it really lays out this history in a much more gripping and enlightening way than most books on this period. And the seeds of much of what is bedeviling our country now really can be found in the Devil's Chessboard era of Alan Dulles.
In your opinion, as somebody who has done all this research and has written an incredible book, and I agree, everybody should read it, do you think the CIA is stoppable? Do you think it should be stopped?
I think John Kennedy was on the right track after the Bay of Pigs disaster, this,
Mm-hmm.
the invasion of Cuba that the CIA botched in 1961, soon after JFK took office at the White House. And he realized the CIA was out of control. That was the final straw for him. I think he came into the White House knowing because his father, Joe Kennedy, sat on the Intelligence Advisory Board, and he was telling his son how out of control the CIA was from the beginning. Under Alan Dulles. He made, I think, a calculated, politically calculated, and very tragic decision, JFK, to keep Alan Dulles on board
Yes.
with the CIA. I think he felt because he had won such a narrow election in 1960 that he needed to keep some of these Republican establishment figures inside his administration for the sake of continuity and so on. But he realized soon what a mistake that was, and he did end up firing Dulles within the first year after the Bay of Pigs. And after that disaster, he actually asked Arthur Schlesinger, who was one of his liberal advisors, the historian from Harvard, who served Kennedy as an advisor in the White House, and he had an intelligence background himself, Schlesinger, going back to World War II with the OSS, the agency that predated the CIA. And so he asked Schlesinger, this is Kennedy, to do a review of the CIA and make a proposal to the president for how it should be reformed or broken up. Because he was so furious right after the Bay of Pigs, he famously said he wanted to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter to the winds. This was Kennedy. So essentially, Schlesinger presents a proposal to the president that follows along those lines and saying, yes, the CIA should be broken up and should be put under much firmer control. And particularly the covert action wing of the CIA is particularly problematic, Schlesinger realized, and needed much more oversight because it was essentially operating completely on its own, and Dulles was doing whatever he wanted to. So, unfortunately, the pushback from the CIA and the National Security State in Washington was so strong that Kennedy did not follow through on his intention to seriously reform the CIA. and it was kind of stalemated at that point. He made another error by bringing in another Republican to replace Dulles, a guy named John McCone, who was a Republican businessman, a wealthy guy from Southern California who served in the Eisenhower administration as the head of the Atomic Energy Commission. Again, another sort of national security corporate type who Kennedy thought he needed for political reasons to sort of cover that flank. But Arthur Schlesinger and others were outraged that Kennedy made that decision. They wanted someone who really was dedicated to reforming the CIA. And McCone turned out to be another traitor towards the Kennedys. He was heard going around Washington disparaging Kennedy policies all over the place at parties and so on. He was an enemy of the Kennedys. And he was an ally. He became an ally of Alan Dulles. And I believe, as I lay out in the book, that in fact, McCone was nothing more than really a figurehead. He was not an old boy from the old boy CIA network. He didn't have all the sort of inside connections that Alan Dulles did. And Alan Dulles pretty much continued to run the CIA, even though McCone was at least officially the new CIA director. And as I write in the book, all the top CIA lieutenants and officials kept coming to Dulles' home after he was fired in Georgetown and essentially reporting to him. So this is our democracy. The national security state pretty much does whatever it wants to do, no matter who's president and no matter what the president is ordering them to do.
Right. This is a little bit off topic, but it occurred to me, and I don't want to put you on the spot if you haven't seen this movie, but in the first part of the interview, we talked about Hollywood and its connections to the national security state. But did you ever see that movie, The Good Shepherd, with Matt Damon?
I did.
And how do you think, this is just kind of an aside, do you think that that was based loosely on Alan Dulles' life?
I do. I think it was based on the Dulles era, and there was kind of composite characters based on Dulles and on James Jesus Angleton, of course, his notorious sidekick, the head of counterintelligence. I think the movie was directed by Robert De Niro, was well-meaning, but I think it was confused, and the history was kind of a mashup of lots of things. I think the great movie about the real CIA has yet to be made.
Uh-huh.
We talked earlier, as you said, Cindy, about the difficulty of getting Hollywood to make truthful movies about the national security state. You know, after Oliver Stone made the explosive film JFK, probably one of the most honest films ever made about American power, back in 1991, the CIA essentially said, well, that's not going to happen again. And they set up a major office, which continues to operate to this day in Hollywood, to review films about, the espionage world, about national security, and to basically spin Hollywood the way they want Hollywood to go. So as a result, I think ever since that era, you've seen, kind of one movie after the next, a TV show that glorifies the national security state, that says what we need is actually more aggressive action against the bad guys, not more congressional or democratic oversight. And always in these films or TV shows, the people who are trying to control the CIA and prevent them from doing all this, whatever they want to do, are portrayed as kind of wimpy bureaucrats who are standing in the way of protecting the American people. And so you have, shows like Homeland, movies like Zero Dark 30,
24.
Yeah, 24, American Sniper. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that. If you look at who's making these TV shows and films, you see that in many cases, they're actually, the producers or writers are actually employed by the CIA at one point. They were CIA agents. And if not that, then the people who are advising these producers and writers are often CIA people or former CIA people. So there's a propaganda machine, a CIA propaganda machine that is very active in Hollywood. In fact, my new book imprint, Hot Books, is publishing a new book in June called Spooked by a great young investigative journalist, Nicholas Scow, who wrote the book Kill the Messenger about Gary Webb.
Oh, yeah.
And the movie starring Jeremy Renner was based on that, a movie that no one saw because the studio dumped it.
Right.
And to the CIA's great delight. But you should, download it on Netflix and watch that movie. It's a great movie, and it shows how the CIA manipulates the press. And in the case of Gary Webb, drove this heroic investigative journalist not only out of the profession, but to his death. He ended up, of course, committing suicide. So, in any case, it's very difficult because the CIA roadblocks and their influence in Hollywood to get an honest movie made about things like I write about. And I had a very, you know, unfortunate episode already. We talked about this a little before, I think, in your experience in Hollywood. But with my earlier book, Brothers, which was optioned by Lionsgate, this is my book about Bobby Kennedy and his search for the truth about what happened to his brother in Dallas. And it was optioned by Lionsgate. We had all these big names attached to do the TV series based on the book. And it looked like one place after the next. It was ready to go. And then at the last minute, including Stars Network, which is run by supposedly this very brave guy, Chris Albrecht, who did Sopranos at HBO. Chris Albrecht loved it. He was all set to go to make Brothers the centerpiece of his fall season. And then like 2 days later, suddenly we get a call, sorry, it's off. So, you know, he never explained why, but you can only imagine. You know, did he get a call from someone saying, what, are you crazy? You can't do this series. You know, it says that Bobby Kennedy believed his brother was killed by the CIA. So I think there's enormous pressures on Hollywood people to toe the company line, the company being the CIA or the Pentagon or you know, whatever. And it's really unfortunate because most people get their information, from entertainment in this country, from Hollywood. And if it's not on the big screen or the little screen, it's kind of invisible. Books, you know, like mine, the ones that we write, people like us, Cindy, they get to a certain audience. But, you know, in my book, for instance, this new book that I just wrote, I've now heard, despite the media blackout, The Devil's Chessboard has sold about 40,000 copies in hardback and ebooks. Nice. Well, that's not bad, and it'll probably get up to, you know, higher than that by the time the paperback comes out. But say between the hardback and the paperback and the ebooks, it sells ultimately over 100,000 copies. In the book world, that will be seen as a solid success. But, you know, when you're talking about trying to influence a country of, what, 200 and, what, 80 million people?
330 right at this point.
Is it good now?
Yeah.
I'm behind the curve.
Yeah.
In any case, you know, your impact is pretty limited as a writer. And the only way that you can make a wider impact is if Hollywood, if the film world, the entertainment world does, make something based on your book. And even then, of course, you're not certain it'll have any impact because, like this great movie Kill the Messenger about Gary Webb, completely disappeared. And I bet there's not more than, you know, at the most, but a couple hundred thousand people who even knew that movie existed. So anyway, it's a battle, you know. Writing is fighting, as Ishmael Reed, the writer, once said. And I'm not naive about this, but, we all have to be prepared. We're in a long-term battle to take this country back from the oligarchy, the permanent war state, the Wall Street war state, as I call it, that took this country over. And it took it over under Alan Dulles and his brother. And they've been occupying our country ever since, these forces of greed and violence. And it's up to the people, people like us, to reclaim our country.
I do want to talk about your publishing concern and American Nuremberg. The thing that I thought about The Good Shepherd when I saw it with my sister, is we wanted to, after it was over, we wanted to like make everybody in the audience stay and have a teach-in about how this wasn't fiction. It was, you know, the CIA is evil and actually does things like this. But to us, the danger was that people just thought it was a fictional story, like zombies or vampires or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I think people, by and large, when it comes to spies, they just think James Bond, or they think, you know, Mission Impossible. And to them, it's a cool world. It's a world where, these warriors, these knights are out there defending our lives. And we kind of feel like, well, do whatever you have to do to protect us,
right.
Our peace and our security. And unfortunately, that kind of ignorance leads America into one kind of disaster after the next. The only way for the American people to, change the course of this country is to start growing up, not acting like children, mm-hmm. not seeing this as all a fairy tale, the good guys versus bad guys, and we're always the good guys, that the world is much more complex and disturbing than that, and they have to read books, and they have to educate themselves. And the media doesn't make it, easy, because the media is just so filled with lies and propaganda. But there are ways to sift through all that bullshit and to get to the truth, but it takes some energy and it takes some commitment.
All right, David. Well, thank you so much. I know you're really busy and you've given the soapbox so much of your time, and we really appreciate it. Like I said, for part one, we got some great feedback. But what's talk about this new project, American Nuremberg, and Hot Books, is it?
Yeah, so I have taken a little break from writing, and in the last year or so, I've partnered with Skyhorse, which is a wonderful independent book publisher. They've done some terrific books on national security and on all the issues we've been talking about, books by Jesse Ventura, John Kiriakou, the CIA whistleblower, and many others. This new series is called Hot Books. It's a series of short investigative books on the most burning topics in America. And so our most recent release is American Nuremberg by a philosophy professor at the University of San Francisco, which is a Catholic university here in San Francisco. Her name is Rebecca Gordon. She also was a human rights activist in Central America during the Reagan Wars there. She's a brave and very brilliant woman. And she's written a book called American Nuremberg, The U.S. Officials Who Should Be Indicted for War Crimes Post 9/11. And, from Obama and Bush on down, it's a very thoughtful, it's not just, rant. It's a very thoughtful legal and philosophical discourse on the crimes that have been committed in our names by these men, and the stain that's left on our country, and how we as citizens can do the job that Congress should be doing in courts but won't. And that's bringing these men somehow to justice, and at least starting the process that, say, Bertrand Russell and Jean-Paul Sartre did during the Vietnam War with a citizen's inquiry into the war crimes. And so that's what she ends up calling for. And as I say, we have another really terrific book by Nick Scow coming out on the CIA and how it manipulates the press and Hollywood. It's called Spooked, and that'll be out in June. And then The Burn Pits is another recent book by a military whistleblower named Joseph Hickman, who served in the Marines and the Army. And Joe writes about these terrible open-air pits where the Army has been burning everything imaginable at military bases in Afghanistan and Iraq. Everything from plastics to tires to old WMD to medical waste, human body parts. And so this terrible pollution has sickened thousands of our soldiers and also people who live in those areas. And many of these soldiers are not coming home with terrible respiratory diseases and their cancers, including, we believe, Beau Biden, who served at one of the most polluted bases.
Okay, yeah.
And he, of course, died from a rare brain cancer. He was perfectly healthy before he went overseas. So, again, these books are being blacked out. They're being ignored. The media hasn't been paying attention. It's the same treatment that I got with my own book. But we're doing our best to turn these books into a cause, because they are important books for the American people to know and discuss. And we're doing our best.
Well, keep in touch with me, and anything that I can do or the Cindy Sheehan Soapbox can do, get these authors on, to help promote the books, just let me know, and we'll be happy to help with these things, especially with American Nuremberg, because, it'll be my goal, my mission till the day I die to get justice for Casey and for millions of other people.
Well, I I'm so honored to be on your show, Cindy, and I respect so much what you've done for not just your own family and the memory of Casey, but for the American people over the years. And, you know, carry on. And I would love to continue working with you in any way I can.
Well, perfect. Me too. So, David, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, I think we've done a great job covering it.
Oh, thank you so much again for giving your time and for everything you do. And I look forward to a future collaboration.
Terrific. Thank you.
Well, thank you, David. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.